Welcome. To understand the mind completely, just forget everything that you think you know about the mind. And I'm not asking you to do that forever, just while you're here today. Completely forget everything that you think you know about the mind. Everything you've learned from wherever you've learned it, plus your own personal philosophies, whatever they might be. And for most of us, that's a lot to forget. Because for most of us, we're running software that has been added to over the course of our lives. So we have lots of thoughts and emotions and sensations and other things. But these are just like a software program that's running. In and of itself, it doesn't cause any trouble. However, when we start to have a lot of beliefs about all these thoughts and emotions, then they start to cause us trouble. So, you know, what we can count on about our mind is that it is a basic space. That's what it is. It's a basic space. And that space is entirely pure. And everything that goes on within that space, that is entirely pure too. It's inseparable from the space. So any thoughts or emotions we have, and our thoughts and emotions are just what we could call impressions that are responses to experiences, whether they're inner experiences or outer experiences. So these are just, they're simple impressions, that's all they are. They're energy within the basic space of mind. They're the dynamic energy of the mind. They're inseparable from the mind, but in and of themselves, they don't cause any trouble. They're not problematic in any way. They only become problematic when we have belief systems that they are problematic. So let's look at it another way. Within the all-encompassing basic space of mind, which is a pure and all-encompassing balanced view, occur many points of view. We'll just call all the thoughts, emotions, all the impressions of the mind points of view. Within the all-encompassing basic space of the mind. And number two is that all of these impressions, this dynamic energy of the mind, the points of view, they cause no trouble. They're not hindrances. They're not obstacles. Nothing needs to be done about them. They're not anything that can disturb us in any way. It's only when we have a belief that they can disturb us that they're able to disturb us. So this is simply a belief system that what's occurring within mind can disturb us or make us happy for that matter. But really, when we look at what occurs within the mind, whatever it is disturbing. Disturbing if we believe that it's going to give us something, either painful or pleasureful. So, you know, if we have certain thoughts within the mind that we want to keep because they're sources of pleasure, then those are disturbing because we can't hold on to them. It's impossible to hold on to the thoughts and emotions that give us pleasure. And then the other ones, the negative ones, we want to get rid of. So they're disturbing too. So see whether they're positive or negative, these labels that we've given everything that occurs that is never problematic from the beginning. This causes us to feel uncomfortable in life. So if we're always trying to hold on to good thoughts and emotions and get rid of bad thoughts and emotions, they're equally disturbing in that way because we can't hold on to the good ones and we can't get rid of the bad ones. So, you know, what to do Well, what to do is already evident in what I've described. We, through habitual pattern of our software, learn to get very involved with all of the dynamic energy of mind, the thoughts and emotions, and to give them incredible significance and importance as though they really are something. All the while we're attributing significance and importance to them, the entire basic space of their natural presence is completely wide open and carefree. All it is the basic space of mind. Just because labels are applied to the basic space of mind and its impressions doesn't mean that those impressions change into something. They never change into anything. They always remain the basic space of the mind, which is in complete equilibrium always. Now, I can prove that to you right here, that the basic space of mind is in complete equilibrium always, with all of its contents always and forever just naturally falling away, naturally vanishing, with nothing needing to be done about them. All of us, no matter who we are, have looked at it in a mirror at some point in our life for the first time. And then over the course of our lives, we look in a mirror again and again as we change, as our physical appearance changes. But almost everyone who looks in a mirror at some point says, wow, you know, whatever is looking in this mirror, that has never changed. I see someone in the mirror here who's getting wrinkles and gray hair or grew from 5 years to 10 years old or whatever it is. But what is looking is completely unaffected. What is looking is completely unaffected by all these impressions, all these thoughts and emotions that are responses to experiences. And, you know, if we just really rest as that equilibrium of what's looking and never changing, then it's much easier to allow just all of these unpredictable thoughts and emotions to be whatever they are, without getting overwhelmed by their importance or significance. We drain ourselves of our vitality. We drain ourselves of our life energy when we persist in holding to the significance and importance of something which is nothing other than a basic space. So you see, whether we label an impression of the mind as anger or whether we label it as joy, it's the same basic space. It's only when we start to think that some things are good and other things are bad that we seem to have fallen out of the great equalness, the total simplicity of the great equalness. Through acknowledging these thoughts and emotions over and over again as being significant in their own right, we start to ignore the basis of the thought itself. We just don't notice that it's there. So through acknowledging the significance of our thoughts and emotions over and over again, we come to believe that they're real. And when we acknowledge our natural state, the natural state of our own being, the ease of our own being, the complete equilibrium of the natural state of the mind over and over again, that becomes more obvious. So, you know, this is just as simple as resting as awareness. Resting is the basic space of mind. Awareness and the basic space of mind are synonymous. To rest as that awareness repeatedly for short moments many times until it becomes obvious. So this is completely uncontrived. We're not trying to get into any kind of a state like no thought or non-conceptual state, no self, bliss, emptiness, none of that. Those are all just other points of view. We don't need to change anything in order to realize the timeless freedom of everything as it is. When we rest in this totally natural way as the awareness or basic space of all the points of view, then we begin to see these points of view in a new way. When we begin to rest as awareness, one of the things we notice is we start to notice that some of the points of view when they appear, in other words, some of the thoughts and emotions when they appear, instead of them being something we want to do something about, either hold to them or push them away, instead it's like meeting an old friend. I know you. I've seen you before. And then gradually we transition from that to seeing that there's nothing to do about these thoughts and emotions. So first we recognize them as though they're an old friend. We don't see them in the same way. Then it isn't that we do anything when they appear. They appear and they're their own undoing, whatever the thought or emotion is, like a line drawn in water or the knot in a snake untying itself. So after we just rest as awareness, and for a while all of these thoughts and emotions we notice they're their own undoing. We've never had to do anything about them. And then lastly, the thoughts and emotions are, it's like returning to a house where we once lived and we were totally comfortable and it was filled with all of our furniture and belongings, and we go back to the house and it's completely empty. So, you know, it's just like the solar winds stir the air in the sky and the clouds just disappear naturally. The clouds come from pure space and they return to pure space. And so just by resting as awareness, everything that we thought to be something becomes completely resolved in the basic space of awareness. And this happens very naturally and in a completely uncontrived way. No circumstances whatsoever need to be changed. The timeless wisdom of the magnificent clear light of awareness, the vast expanse, has never been stained in any way. Everything is already completely resolved within it, and nothing that occurs within it needs to have anything whatsoever done about it. Whatever your circumstances are, they're the perfect circumstances for resting as awareness and realizing the potent benefit of the timeless wisdom power of great equalness. No circumstance needs to be changed. In the stainless, the forever stainless, flawless equalness of total simplicity of everything just as it is, there's nothing whatsoever that needs to be adjusted. How could any contributing circumstances be required for that which has never had circumstances? When we rest as the great equilibrium, then we're no longer tied to all of our points of view. If we continue to persist in our belief systems, whatever they are, it's like being a pole planted in the ground that can't possibly get out of the ground. And if we continue to believe in all our points of view as having meaning or significance, it's like an elephant stepping into quicksand. If an elephant steps into quicksand, wow. who we are is easy. It's just that through lots of different belief systems, it's made to seem very complicated. But it really is not complicated at all. Whatever appears is timelessly free, and there's nothing that needs to be done about it. In the restful alertness of complete perceptual openness in all experience, everything is seen as it is. The restful alertness of complete perceptual openness in all experience is like a whirling blade that cuts through all points of view. There's no way to hold on to them. What seemed to be so important and significant a moment ago now is not. And it's just the most amazing, miraculous thing. Because all of the software we've been running that we thought to be so important, when we rest as awareness, we uninstall it just like that. We completely uninstall it. It's just not running anymore. Once we see the great pervasive emptiness of everything as it is, then it's like running Windows 98. No one would want to do that now unless they were a tinkerer with some old machine. But no one would want to. What's the new Windows Visio or something like that? The new operating system. But, no one would want to play around with that. And it's just like no one would want to use the internet of 35 years ago today. And we wouldn't want to use one of those old telephones, where you picked up the thing and held it to your ear, and then you picked up the other piece and talked into it, and you had to click the thing and call the operator, and then the operator would connect you to somebody else. Well, yeah, no sense in doing that when it's so easy. See, all the software that we feel has been installed and is just cranking away, running us, and that we're totally at the whim of, there's never been anything there. It's never been anything troublesome. It's only when we think it's troublesome and we apply a lot of belief systems to what's going on that we feel burdened. And in each of our cultures, we have many of these belief systems, no matter what they are. Things like sin, original sin, karma, reincarnation. And some of these are very strong because most people I meet who believe in karma believe that they're somehow karmically bound in some way that does not allow them to realize their natural state, and believe that there are other people who aren't karmically bound and that those are the people who can realize their natural state. And even if you have a belief system like that, I just suggest that you rest as awareness when that belief system comes up. And from the great equalness of everything as it is, you will come to truly understand that all belief systems are primordially pure. There's never been a belief system or a point of view called karma or reincarnation or original sin or any kind of sin anywhere in the primordial purity of the great equalness of basic space. So, and what I'm saying, it's really not against any beliefs like Hindu beliefs or Buddhist beliefs either. The epitome teachings of both Buddhism and Hinduism say exactly what's being stated here. They all say that karma and reincarnation have never existed. They exist only within points of view. When we take points of view to be real, then they exist there. They seem to exist there. But when we rest as the naturally, greatly perfect, totally simple equilibrium of basic space that is the entirety of everything as it is, then we come to realize that we have always been entirely beyond time and space. We've been entirely beyond causation. We've been entirely beyond all labels that attribute significance to anything. Whatever appears, it has two aspects, and those two aspects are its vivid appearance as whatever it appears to be, and the basic space of awareness. Those are the two aspects. And unless we know those two aspects of everything, then we can't possibly understand the true nature of reality. If an appearance comes up and all we know about it is its label, then we'll just see it as really being something in its own right. We'll see it as having an independent existence. We'll see it as having an identity. We'll see it as something substantial in its own right. And then, you know, we might say, oh, everything is empty, and flip over into that state. Oh, it's an empty basic state, so I'm just going to stay put in that state. But you see, neither of these are places to take up residence, either in that everything is empty or that everything is something. Forever stainless space has never held to anything. It's never gotten stuck anywhere, not in any extreme, either that things exist or they don't exist. So if we say things don't exist, then that's just another point of view. In the natural rest of total purity, there's no need to do anything about anything. And what naturally comes about and is naturally occurring and inseparable from who we already are is an immaculate wisdom that's completely beyond dictionary labels and beyond thinking, completely beyond words and concepts. Do you have a burning desire to ask a question? All right.
said in the dressing of awareness, there's nothing to be done about anything. What's about suffering? What's about bad things? Shouldn't you try to change that if you're able to?
You must listen very carefully to what I say and leave all of your thoughts outside the door there. What I stated is that when we rest as awareness, rather than relying on thinking and ideas about causation and time and space to solve problems, what naturally occurs and is already present and inseparable from that complete rest as awareness is immaculate wisdom, wisdom that is entirely beyond all points of view. And this clear light of wisdom, it doesn't rely on conventional ideas about anything, as it is entirely beyond causation, entirely beyond time and space, but yet has total all-knowingness of causation and time and space. It's able to solve problems in a potently beneficial way that would never be possible through ordinary thinking. So that's what to do about suffering. You know, what to do about suffering is that we're plummeting into more and more suffering by taking ourselves to be our software programming of all our thoughts and emotions. And right now, humankind is continuing to use a very primitive mind. But we're at a critical juncture, and it requires that we evolve into this new mind of total wisdom that is filled with great powers beyond anything that most people can even imagine. This is what we need today in our world. We don't need more thinking. Our best thinking has gotten us where we are. And it's not pretty.
Would you say is the new thinking? How would you describe that as thinking or knowing?
Well, I don't get involved in the Great Freedom Teaching, doesn't get involved in a lot of complicated terminology, so I'll just keep it completely simple like we do. When we're all wrapped up in our thoughts and emotions and how we're going to feel comfortable in the world by rearranging those thoughts and emotions, we could call that the identity with points of view, so an identity based on points of view. We substantialize ourselves through our points of view, and we substantialize others through points of view, and we separate ourselves out from others by doing that. So there's a self and an other. Now, so that's the point of view identity. The other identity I would call the wisdom identity. Now, the point of view identity, it's thoughts and it's, so it's mind, in other words, and it's speech and its qualities and activities. They're all about me. You know, they're all focused on me and my points of view and how I'm going to keep getting some good points of view and get rid of the bad points of view and have a somewhat happy life. So as we rest as awareness, a shift naturally and organically occurs from this point of view identity to the wisdom identity. As the wisdom identity is already present, it's not a destination we're going to. From the very beginning of resting as awareness, the wisdom identity becomes obvious. The first time that we say something like anger comes up and we rest as awareness, the awareness that is the basic space of the anger, rather than elaborating on the anger, in other words, saying I'm angry because of this, I'm angry because of that, or whatever it is, we just rest as awareness as the anger vanishes naturally without a trace, then we see the wisdom benefit of that appearance. We automatically see the wisdom benefit of that appearance. We automatically see that that appearance is not separated out from awareness and it's not separated out from wisdom. And as we strengthen ourselves in that, the wisdom identity becomes more obvious. And the wisdom identity, rather than the body, speech, mind, qualities, and activities all being wrapped up in me, they're all about what will benefit the whole. But this is totally uncontrived and unstoppable. It's not something that is developed, cultivated, learned. It's naturally present and it's completely unstoppable in its great waterfall of cascading benefit. This just comes about naturally. So then the thinking of the mind and the emotions are all related to the benefit of the whole. The qualities and activities of life are related to the benefit of the whole. So in the beginning, self-benefit is realized. The self-benefit of complete freedom from all thoughts and emotions. Complete freedom, night and day, from all thoughts and emotions. And as that intensifies, it becomes benefit for the whole. Does that answer your question?
I think like a child will, I've noticed children will just automatically do, you know, really beautiful, gracious things, you know, and they're not really thinking about it. But like, oh, here, have some of my mushy banana. They just, you know, you're like, oh, well, thanks. You know, but they're just, you know, they're just participating in the flow or...
Well, this is our natural state. It's our natural, timeless wisdom is our natural state. This is what our birthright. This is what we're born as, and it never goes anywhere. It just seems to become dormant through so much attention paid to all the firings and the vast expanse of space. You know, the dynamic energy of awareness, it is inseparable from awareness, like the color blue is inseparable from the sky. There's no way to take the color blue out of the sky. And just like a rainbow in the sky is a vivid appearance of emptiness, so all of the points of view that appear within the basic space of the mind are a vivid appearance of emptiness. We'd never dream of trying to hold on to a rainbow and keep it or go over and try to grab it or anything like that. It's just pure space, and such is true about all of our thoughts and emotions or any points of view that occur. They're pure space and nothing else. And when human beings receive direct instruction that is very unerring, the wisdom identity easily comes to be obvious at all times and swiftly comes about. This has been throughout time, but this is the first time in human history when this unerring instruction is available to everyone all over the world. Until very recently, it's been very difficult to get.
Now, how is this actually done, resting in awareness? I would not know where or how to find the rest and the ease, what to do or not to do, you know, to be in that state.
Uh-huh. So you're saying you don't know how to do that?
Exactly.
Well, then you're in the right place. Resting as awareness is simply the ease of being, the natural ease of everything as it is. And when the habit has been in place of paying so much attention to thoughts and emotions and not feeling any rest, it doesn't seem obvious. But not to worry. Not to worry. There's nothing to get, you know, and no one to get it. Everything is already available to you, even if you don't notice it right now. So what I suggest to people is to keep coming back at least 6 times. And just by coming back without trying to do anything, conviction will begin to dawn in you. Or it may dawn in you suddenly. Mm-hmm. And in this way, you'll become familiar with what it is that's at the basis of all these thoughts and emotions. Yeah. And then, now some people come and just come to the teachings and conviction dawns, that's it. Without anything, you know, without meditating, yoga, anything at all. Tying your shoes or standing up or sitting down or lying down, or you don't have to do anything special. Well, who we are, we already are. And when there's unerring instruction given about that, conviction naturally dawns. So like I said, some people come and then conviction dawns just by coming. And other people couple that with resting as awareness. And so when conviction begins to dawn, then we know what resting as awareness is, because for the first time we feel a natural settledness. So, you know, you don't have to worry about taking yourself to be an I or a personal identity or an ego or anything like that. We don't talk about any of that here. We just talk about resting as awareness. All those points of view naturally are resolved in the basic space of awareness. The I point of view is a point of view just like any other point of view. It's not a special storage container for a bunch of other points of view. The personal identity, it's just a point of view. It's not something special. And the timeless equalness of that which has never been divided, there isn't any special thing that's keeping you from timeless equalness. There's no special thing called an I or a you keeping you from that. So, you know, this just becomes more and more delightfully obvious to you. What's already so becomes delightfully more obvious. How would people here raise their hands in whom conviction has dawned gradually by coming? So see, you know, there are a lot of people here for whom conviction has dawned. It's not like just a couple of people. Or someone wearing special clothes or anything. It's everybody.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I know you're trying to share the time for questions.
I was looking all around, but your teachings do allow to have rest in all sort of activities.
Yes.
So I thought, why the contemplation should be ruled out of that? We can contemplate while resting in awareness.
Oh, uh-huh.
This was done today, and while doing it, the contemplation was awareness is not affected by place or time. It can be at any time, at any place. And then just maybe a couple of times it was repeated, and then suddenly something happened, and it was exactly like elephant sinking in the sand. And then mind could not be, or elephant could not be found for some time anywhere. Just, it was a comment, not a question.
Nothing. Now, what do you mean by that?
Not seeking anything or trying to describe anything. It was just a plain thought, you can call it. Maybe contemplation is not the right word.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden, everything, boom, nothing is there.
Just a non-conceptual state.
Conceptual state, yes.
Uh-huh.
And for a few minutes, it was just like that.
Uh-huh.
I think till that rest lasted. So,
what is a non-conceptual state?
Can't be described.
I can describe it.
Okay.
It's a point of view.
Experience which was
First there was a conceptual point of view, then there was a non-conceptual point of view. Forever stainless, flawless awareness is never stuck anywhere, not in the non-conceptual or the conceptual. It's completely beyond both the non-conceptual and the conceptual. For example, what can you say about awareness in which thoughtlessness and thought are not two? You see, you
All the while, there was a rest in awareness. That must be emphasized. That was there, means whatever thoughts were coming in mind, they were about the awareness, and there was, in a way, complete relaxation at that point also. And when the mind could not be found anywhere, at that time also there was a complete relaxation.
So
it's very difficult to distinguish between the two, but there was a slight difference, you can say. That is what you are referring as a point of view, because there is still seen as a slight difference between the two states.
Yes.
You are saying they are not two, they are just one.
Yes, they are.
But
just
maybe
one.
Slight difference was felt between the two.
Oh, no, this is good.
I can't describe it.
Now this is good. This is definitely a sign of accomplishment. So what I said earlier about the points of view appearing and they seem like an old friend, and then there's rest as awareness when they're identified as an old friend instead of an enemy. And then two is to the points of view appear, and they're their own undoing, so nothing needs to be done about them. And then lastly, the point of view, it's just complete emptiness. There's nothing at all. There's no movement at all, not even noticing that it undoes itself on its own. Everything is totally inseparable. Everything is completely resolved in the great equalness as it always has been. So see, just these simple illustrations are very helpful. They're very helpful. And just keep resting as awareness, whether you're meditating or grocery shopping or whatever it is.
Thank you.
Does Anil do the grocery shopping? No. He may be soon.
Everything is provided there for.
Oh, uh-huh.
Nothing of these worldly things are required.
We'll see. Something more, Anil?
You say that some people are ready for these teachings and some are not at this point. And can't that be attributed to karma?
Well, you know, it could be, but why bother?
Yes, that is right. It was not for me personally, but I thought I will.
I understand. Uh-huh. I understand. You're trying to make sure everyone understands. Uh-huh. Well, you see, if we say, well, people are either ready or they're not ready, it's simple. It's just like some people are ready to learn to swim and other people aren't. They, like one of my sons, when he learned to swim, he just looked at the swimming pool and jumped in, and that was it. My other son, he walked around the pool quite a few times. We were down by the pool for days, you know, and he'd be walking around just looking, and he'd see the other brother in there swimming, and eventually he went in to swim. So you see, it's like that. People who are open-minded and don't need to rely on conceptual frameworks or beliefs so much, it's easier. But you see, then people who do take up the wisdom identity and in whom that becomes obvious, then other people see that and they say, what happened to you? What happened to you? I want what you have. And so then that makes it easier for the people who walk around the pool for a while to eventually jump in. But, you know, if we impose a belief like karma, this is a very pervasive belief system. And it's a belief system that perpetuates a self and other. And then within all the selves and others, it also perpetuates a ruling class. In other words, the people who were born with the right kind of karma, and, you know, they're either able to realize or they're able to have material benefits or whatever it is. But you know, this kind of thinking is all within points of view. It's not within the greatly open-hearted, compassionate wisdom of timeless awareness. It's all within points of view. Compassionate, timeless wisdom, it just can never do enough, you know. Till all suffering is ending, then timeless wisdom, timeless compassion will just be spreading over everything like a waterfall of nectar. So you see, when we talk about things like karma, then automatically we can say, oh, well, this explains everything. And by saying this explains everything, then we don't need to take responsibility for other human beings who don't have what we have. So people who are hungry, don't have clean water, 85% of the world's people, then we can just say, oh, this is because of karma, so we don't have to do anything. You know, it's just their bad karma that they have to live that way. So you see, but this is all within cause and effect and time and space, and trying to explain things in a way that they're understood by the thinking mind, trying to explain things based on point of view. But, you know, when even we'd all have to agree that the Dalai Lama is a magnificent being. Many people believe that. Of course, many people don't believe he's a magnificent being, too. So, you know, that's looking at it realistically. The Chinese do not think he's a magnificent being. They think that he's a threat. Many Chinese people do. So you see, there's never anyone within point of view where everyone agrees. But the Dalai Lama, who is such a great representative of Buddhism and who has so much benefit that he showers all over the world, he said just last year, he said, if science can prove that there is no reincarnation and karma, you know, no reincarnation, which is part of karma, the karmic law, he said, then we will have to change our doctrine in Tibetan Buddhism. So, you know, he has talked very openly about this, and many of these ideas that came about very, very long ago, they've really fallen apart now. You know, they've been deconstructed. To say something about the natural reality of everything that is so simple, the all-encompassing pure view of awareness, inclusive of all points of view, that really sees it like it is. Then we're seeing everything as it really is. And all these beliefs, no matter what they are, they just fall apart. They fall away. And we find something that's beyond beliefs. We find something about ourselves that is completely beyond beliefs. Just in the natural freedom of resting as awareness, we find that which is completely beyond beliefs, which doesn't need any beliefs in order to live and move and have its being. So this is very important.
Is there any other spiritual path that leads to the same type of destination, and how would you define the distinctions of such a path?
Well, you know, as easily, no. And without any belief systems, no. So, you know, I'd say what distinguishes the Great Freedom Teaching is, one, its language is accessible to all people. All 7 billion people, or however many are living, it's accessible to everyone. And so that's an enormous distinction. For the first time, this on-airing instruction is given without any special terminology that people can't understand, and also without karma and reincarnation. So even though the epitome teachings have always said there is no karma and reincarnation, it was very difficult to get a teaching like that, you know. So today, it's very easy for all of us to see that all points of view are included within the all-encompassing view of awareness, period. It's easy to see that. And every point of view is equal. There aren't any special points of view. So points of view like karma, original sin, reincarnation, happiness, joy, freedom, you, me, good, bad, they're all equal in the vast equalness. So only when we're willing to go beyond all of these opposites, to truly go beyond in our own being, to rest as awareness in our own being. We're not talking about some state that's somewhere else. If we were, where would it come from once we had realized it? You know, it's already here, in and as our own being. So when we rest as that, then that's the easiest way to go about it. It's really the easiest way to go about it. May we bring you the microphone? In this way, people who listen to the CDs and watch the DVDs can hear your question.
I ask, what about the teaching of from Eckhart Tolle? Because it's also without a special terminology, and
pardon?
It's also without a special belief system, I guess, I think. I don't know if you know about it a bit.
Well, I do. What I'll say, but I will say this more generally, not just about that teaching, but about others that are similar. This teaching is extremely distinct from that teaching. That teaching posits that there is an ego and a pain body that needs to be dealt with in some way. This teaching from the beginning sees any kind of thing that you've taken yourself to be, whether it's an ego, a personality, or whatever it is just another point of view and awareness. There's nothing that needs to be changed. All points of view, no matter what they are completely equal, whether it's the pain body or the awareness body. There's no special state one's trying to get into. There's no special state like stillness that one is trying to get into. Everything is equal in the basic space of awareness. So you see, teachings that state that there is an ego are all within cause and effect in time and space, even though they may talk about non-duality and point to it. Just by stating that there is something called an ego that is a solid and stable identity or a pain body or whatever it is, it gives that a sense of existence, which it doesn't have. It's just a point of view. We hardly ever think about ourselves as being somebody. So this personal identity, it's just like all of these assumptions that we rarely think about. It's an assumption we have that most people have. And so because there's common agreement, everyone thinks that it's true. But when we rest as awareness, it's easy to see that we hardly ever think about being somebody, that rather, we always are this wide open spaciousness, this wide open vast awareness. And then, you know, once in a while we might clamp down on this idea of being somebody. But it's not something that's ever been held in place anywhere. It isn't located anywhere. It's never dwelled anywhere. It's always been completely identityless and insubstantial. So if we're taking it to be something substantial that we need to get rid of, when there's nothing there to get rid of, then it's a teaching that occurs within cause and effect, a certain cause that will lead to an effect.
Anything you said, it's in the book of Eckhart Tolle. So I don't. All you are saying, it's in the book of Eckhart Tolle, not in the first one where he was talking a bit about pain body, as you said, but in Stillness Speaks, he is speaking from beginning to the end exactly what you are saying now. So.
Well, I'm not here to comment on any teaching. I'm just saying there are two kinds of teachings. One that focuses, that occurs within cause and effect, and focuses on getting into a certain state, like stillness or emptiness or living in an impersonal way or whatever it might be. These are some of the popular ones nowadays. And then there is resting as awareness in which everything is absolutely equal, where nothing needs to change and there's nothing that needs to be done about anything. And where there isn't awareness that's watching an object. So nowadays what I see is that many people are able to have an experience of awareness, but that awareness is like the awareness of a cat watching a mouse. So there's awareness that is observing what appears within it. And there actually is that experience of all points of view being contained within awareness. But that is vastly different than the complete resolution of all points of view in the basic space of awareness. That is not a state. And there's nothing to keep in place, not stillness or anything else. Whatever is appearing, no matter what it is just timelessly free. There's no specific way of being. And there's an outpouring of tremendous benefit that is all-inclusive. So, you know, whereas I think it's very important for people to be introduced to the idea of awareness that can be pointed to, I think it's also very important for people to realize the complete fulfillment of that, whatever it is. But I don't debate or argue, you know, about anything. I'm just saying that this is the way things are, and it's a resource of tremendous benefit. One of the incredible opportunities in the Great Freedom Teaching is that it is a worldwide organization and a worldwide community that offers a complete customer service. So, you know, we have support available for people resting as awareness 24/7 all over the world. We not only give our teachings everywhere all over the world and have a written teaching, but also we give those teachings face-to-face and we give them through many electronic means. So there are some very important things that the Great Freedom Teaching offers that anyone can use. You know, it doesn't matter who your teacher is or what you believe in. But this is something, you know, that's easy to put together these days, so to speak. It's easy to put together a worldwide organization that provides customer service 24/7. You know, everybody's doing it, all of these companies. And this matter of the true nature of our own being, it's something that is available to everyone. And when it's made available to everyone, it can be made available in such a way that everyone has what they need all of the time. You know, it isn't just a book to rely on or certain groups to go to or something like that. It's a true responsiveness of the natural state of being. So, you know, when we talk about the Great Freedom Teaching, we don't talk about it as being any particular thing. What we say is that anyone is welcome here as long as they live. It doesn't matter whether you have a teacher or you don't. If you don't have a teacher, we have teachers here. If you have a teacher, that's great. They can even use our written teaching if they want to. So you see, what's never been stuck anywhere doesn't have any sectarian biases. It's completely open to everyone. In this day and age, there's no reason for it to be any different than that. But, you know, what's really tremendous about this realization of the potent benefit of timeless wisdom is that it's so freeing that all beliefs are set aside in a very fluid way. So So even the beliefs of today or what's said doesn't have to be the same thing as what's said tomorrow. And, you know, this is a very, very important time. The fluidity of everything as it is so perfectly manifested in so many things we see today. Nothing has ever been stuck anywhere. And, you know, just like the internet shows, nothing has ever been stuck anywhere, not even identity or not even the internet. It's never been stuck anywhere. It's just a continuous opening, a very malleable, fluid, vital responsiveness. And it's one that is filled with life, tremendously filled with life. So wherever these wisdom powers of potent benefit are present, there is a tremendous energy of openness and connection and benefit that is never restrained in any way, that never even in any subtle way takes itself to be something. So this is so important. We need this so much today. We don't just need to say we need it. We actually need to be what is needed to respond to the difficult problems, you know? Just to say we need a better place to live is one thing, but to actually have many people displaying these wisdom powers of potent benefit guarantees that it will come about. And that, you know, that wisdom power of potent benefit, it's inseparable from everyone, no matter who they are. So it's not a special thing. It belongs to everyone. Mm-hmm. Sure,
I wanted to refer something to Eckhart Tolle, because before I came to Great Freedom Teaching, I liked very much Eckhart Tolle, and what I found really distinct for myself was that I really loved Eckhart Tolle, and I still really like him.
Sorry?
And
what are you talking about? Eckhart Tolle?
Yeah, Eckhart Tolle. There was a question that came up about the teaching of Eckhart Tolle. So for me, like the main difference that was is that Eckhart Tolle always spoke about of being present, and I really wanted to be present. And there was a lot of effort involved in it, you know, like you have to be present, you know. And sometimes I would come over a sentence and if you generate enough presence, and I feel like, oh, you gotta generate it. It was like, I couldn't, you know, it was like, although now I can perfectly understand what he was trying to point to, because it was nothing that I had to effort to actually generate that presence, but I had to stop effort to actually generate it. It was like, and to understand what he meant was also just to stop. And it was often that he would come, there would come a part in his book that would say that the words or what we refer here to as points of view are just the pointers. They're just the signposts. And it's ridiculous just to hang on to a signpost and stand there and not to walk further, just to look ahead. And it was so great, like, and before when I came here as well, it was the same thing as with Eckhart Tolle. I tried to hold on to the signpost, and it was only when I actually stopped trying to understand even what was pointed out here that I could actually experience it. That it wasn't something that I had to understand. It was something, much more better than just hanging on to the signpost.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, one of the incredible things about the wisdom expanse is that It's totally responsive by nature. So whatever beings need, that's what appears. It's a treasure trove of wish fulfillment. And whatever beings need, that's what it appears. So whatever teaching a being may need, that's what appears. Whatever it is. Uh-huh.
In the afternoons we do a retreat called Pure Space. And it just occurred to me during this discussion that we have people in there who've like studied every kind of religion or practice. I myself listen to a lot of Eckhart Tolle audio, and we could really have a big discussion for hours, for days even. And yet we understand it intimately, and we never talk about it. And through this teaching, everybody admits we don't understand it, but we feel awakened through it. So what the other teachers, we love them for what they are, but what they seem to have given us was a bigger understanding or some kind of openness to experience something deeper, but a lot of knowledge. And what this one seems to have given us is a direct experience of awakening with, or not even awakening, a direct experience of true nature without even understanding the text in any meaningful way. So that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah, there's whatever your teaching is, it's the right one for you. That's a good way to look at it. Whatever floats your boat, so to speak. Yeah, you know, one of the things about personal identity that's so interesting is that when we believe in our points of view, then we substantialize ourselves through those points of view. And we say, I'm a self, and then everybody else is an other. So I substantialize myself with my points of view, and then I look at everyone else as being their points of view. And that automatically places us in competition with each other. So there's the substantialization of self through points of view, and then that self competes with others to try to show the abilities of their points of view as being better than the other one. So you see, when we just rest as awareness, then it's easy to see that everything is perfect just the way it is. And, you know, whatever beings need is freely given. There's no need to get into these bipartisan ways of looking at things. Every week I think I have my favorite word, and it's bipartisan this week. Because there's so much bipartisan conduct these days, isn't there? Between people, yeah. All based on points of view. Two-sided, you know, my side and your side.
Ramana Maharshi used to say, self-denial is the last obstacle. Now, when I meditate on that, it seems like self-denial seems to be that there is nothing inside, nothing at all. Now, this seems to be the same as awareness, but it isn't. And I find that very confusing. Like, self-denial is denying that there is a self inside, but you're also saying that there is no self, because there's also no other. And I'm very confused about that. There must be something to hold on to. Well, you know, is there then not anything substantial that... There must be something more or less substantial or solid or just there that one is.
I understand what you're saying, and sometimes when someone like Ramana Maharshi says something, then someone else wrote it down, you know, and only a few things about his life were filmed and recorded, very few. So most of these were just written down by someone else. in the languages he spoke. He spoke several languages. And then at a later time, they were translated into English by yet another person. So, you know, we don't really know what Ramana Maharshi said. And, of course, Ramana Maharshi was speaking to people where he lived in Tiruvannamalai. So he had a certain way of communicating with people who lived there and were all culturally similar. So, you know, what Ramana Maharshi was saying was to rest his awareness. You know, all these things that appear, that they are points of view within that awareness, including self-denial or whatever it might be. But if we take any of these terms, and like you said, if we cling to it like it's a pole or a signpost, then it can seem like it's something scary. Self-denial, oh my gosh, what does that mean? Am I just going to be end up being an empty puddle on the floor? Or will my mother still recognize me? And but you see, who we are, it's not a frightening matter. We're not going to be made into someone who is weird and doesn't fit into our culture and time and place. You know, we're not all of a sudden going to be living in a cave at Arunachala. We might be, but it's unlikely. You know, it's really unlikely. This is a different era. And so no need to be afraid of the self and its disappearance, because it never appeared. You see, you've operated quite nicely without a self all along. You just have an idea that there's something solid and stable there. But you see, there never has been, so there's nothing to get rid of. And there's no special state to get into either. Your awareness has always been wide open and spacious. It's always been completely inseparable from everything else that appears, whether it's you or anyone else or anything else. So you see, there's nothing to get to understand. You just rest as awareness, get more and more familiar with that complete ease of being that's naturally present everywhere. And every word Ramana Maharshi said will be perfectly clear to you. Every word of he said, you will understand its underlying meaning and implication. Plus, you'll have a decisive experience of it.
How can it be that, like all the things you describe, and you know, many other people have, through the ages, that it can seem such a far away and godly and hard to reach, you know, state or thing, like something so desirable that it's beyond, just beyond.
Uh-huh. Well, how did it become so complicated? Just belief systems, that's it. Belief systems. So, for example, taking the institutions of a particular era, long, long, long ago, and then saying, well, self-realization always looks like this. And then replicating exactly the same institutions in the same dress all the way through to this era, and all the belief systems coming along with them from that are thousands of years old. Well, you know, this is all fine. There's nothing wrong with that diversity of expression. It's really beautiful. It's wonderful. It's part of the magnificent display. But today we're a much different world, and so we have different institutions now that speak about the same thing and speak about it in a plain-spoken way that's very straightforward. So you see, you know, all of these things that are present in age-old institutions, like in Buddhism, the Three Jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, there's similar refuge available here, but it's in a contemporary form, you see. In Great Freedom, we call it the Four Comforts: the teacher, the teaching, the community, and the practice of resting as awareness. And in this way, people come together as a worldwide community to realize the true nature of their being. So just because it has been made overly complicated doesn't mean it is, or that it has to continue to be that way. Yeah, it's all okay. This is a time of great change. We all see that before our very eyes. It's a time of great change. You know, even 20 years ago, there were so few books available on this topic. And now there are many, many books available that at least point to it. And so, you know, we're developing new institutions now that are going to serve us completely in this regard. Yeah. Just, it was bound to happen.
Do terms like spirit and soul come in anywhere in all this?
In the Great Freedom Teaching?
Yeah.
All that has labels, no matter what it is, so you could take any word in the dictionary, is a point of view appearing within the complete equalness of timeless awareness. So all points of view, no matter what they are equal. Once we say that there is something that is a special something, then we're saying it's not equal to everything else. Do you see what I'm saying? So if we say that there's a special entity or whatever it is, then all of a sudden, then we have to write a philosophy book and have a lot of other belief systems. But when we keep it very, very simple, and this is very easy for people to understand today because we have so many contemporary metaphors that are like space, pure space, and people have a lot of knowledge about space. It's easy to see that everything occurs within space and that everything is comprised of space. The internet is another incredible metaphor that we have today. It's easy to see that we really are bodiless and that we're able to communicate in a bodiless way, a formless way. So you see, we have many metaphors today with software, with all this code within one thing. It's easy for us to understand that we've been programmed with our points of view, but that we're not a victim of these points of view. They're just free. They're free information in space. They're within the vast expanse of space, always timelessly free. So yeah, it's a very rich time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Someone back there. One more question and then we're going to go on our merry way.
Hello.
Hello.
Could you explain a little bit more what exactly you mean by benefit?
Uh-huh. What is your question?
Since it is true what you say, and I agree a lot with what you're saying, then where can there be benefit for anyone or anything except inside a personal identity?
Where can benefit be other than inside a personal identity?
Yeah.
That's a good question. The vast expanse of timeless awareness is the wholly positive ground of being. And that another term for that is beneficial. So everything about this expanse of being is pervaded with beneficial intent, in that anything that appears is an appearance of it. So what is an appearance of the wholly positive? What is an appearance of beneficial intent is beneficial intent. Our choice is whether we realize that or not. When we rest as awareness, we recognize everything that appears as an appearance of that wisdom, as an appearance of that benefit. So say that, I don't know if this is the case with you, but you had a problem with anger, and once in a while it comes up. For most people, we've been angry, so it's, you probably have been too. It comes up, and then you try to make something out of it. In other words, you say, oh, that's so-and-so's fault, or it's because my mother and father did something to me when I was a kid, or it's the fault of that institution or that political figure, whatever it is. Then that's dualistic elaboration. But if the anger comes up, and in the direct encounter with the anger, there's rest as awareness, not splitting off from the anger like a cat watching a mouse, but awareness as the basic space of that anger. See, there's never been a personal identity. So whenever a point of view appears, that's the appearance of awareness. It is an awareness somewhere else looking at the point of view. So in that moment that is recognized as a wisdom appearance, as awareness, then its benefit is obvious, and its benefit is experienced directly in your own being. And so that benefit is the benefit of the vast expanse. When it's embodied in a human being, and it's recognized and acknowledged, it becomes tremendously potent. And how does it become potent? Its full evidence is potent in that it doesn't have any conventional beliefs about anything. You know, it doesn't have any conventions that it needs to participate in. It has a freewheeling way of providing benefit that isn't ever fixed in any way. It's completely free in all ways of states. Whatever is appearing, it is. So it doesn't require anything other than what it is.
Then would mean just to be is a benefit in itself. It's beneficial in itself.
Absolutely, just to be is beneficial in itself. And the more one is, so to speak, just resting as awareness, and then, of course, there comes a point where there's that rest without trying to do so, the great equanimity of everything. Once that self-benefit is so obvious, it just flows out into benefit for the whole. It can't be stopped. The vast expanse is the beneficial whole. And when we abide as that, when we're embodied as that, then that benefit becomes obvious in our own life and everything we're doing, no matter what it is. We live in an entirely new way.
One more question about the sheet you have, what is lying there. In the second part, awareness is either involved. So it's about this tomato decision. Uh-huh. Either awareness is involved in these points of view and the stories they elaborate, or it is at ease in its natural state. Uh-huh. So there's either this or that. But actually, as far as I can see, there's actually both at the same time going on.
We'll put this within the context of the document you're reading. The document you're reading is called The Most Important Choice.
Right.
And what it describes are two ways of being. One is non-recognition of awareness. And non-recognition of awareness is to take the points of view to be real and then just play one's entire life with all those points of view. Recognition of awareness is to rest as the awareness aspect of the point of view and recognize that the point of view has these two aspects, its vivid appearance and its basic space of awareness. The vivid appearance, whatever it is always changing, but the awareness is inseparable from whatever point of view appears. And we're either lost in the point of view or gone beyond in awareness.
Right.
Does that answer your question?
So the involvement into the expression of awareness is also an expression of awareness itself. So being involved in the expression, whatever it is, self-image or whatever, is in itself also an expression of awareness. And in this, there's no separation.
You mean yourself, your own being? I'm not sure what you're getting at there.
The moment I identify myself with an image, it's also an expression of this awareness, what is always free. Isn't it?
I'm not sure what you're asking there. I'll describe it in my own words, all right.
Yeah, sure, okay.
Uh-huh.
It's just what I mean. Maybe it's just the words on the letter that creates in my mind a difference between either I am involved or I am free. And resting in resting awareness, or I'm involved in the expression of awareness.
Either you're distracted by points of view,
yeah,
or you're resting as awareness. You're always resting as awareness, but if you're distracted with points of view, you don't know you're resting as awareness.
Right.
When you're really resting as awareness, no matter what appears, there's no distraction. That's the key.
That's right.
That's the key.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're going to close now and come back at 1:00. Thank you all for coming today.